This is the TriDot Podcast. TriDot uses your training data and genetic profile combined with predictive analytics and artificial intelligence to optimize your training, giving you better results in less time with fewer injuries. Our podcast is here to educate, inspire, and entertain. We'll talk all things triathlon with expert coaches and special guests. Join the conversation and let's improve together.
Tasty episode of the podcast, plated and ready to serve up today. On the menu is yummy, delicious data knowledge, a specialty of ours here at TriDot. And I have a predictive fitness software engineer and a TriDot coach playing chef in the podcast kitchen, cooking up some conversation about the importance of having quality data in our training. So obviously, I went all in on the cooking metaphors here in the intro today. Do I regret it? Maybe just a little, but there's no turning back now. We're recording, we're rolling. Our first guest is predictive fitness software engineer Corey Gackenheimer. Corey is a full-stack software engineer from Warsaw, Indiana. He's worked as a software developer for over 15 years and came on board full-time with the TriDot dev team at the start of 2021. As a TriDot ambassador, he finished his first Ironman at Ironman Florida in 2020. He's a CrossFit junkie. He's an Ironman. He's a software engineer. Corey Gackenheimer, welcome to your first full episode of the TriDot podcast.
Well, thanks, Andrew. I'm super excited to be on. I wouldn't say I'm a CrossFit junkie because I can quit anytime I want, but I am happy to be on again, like I said, to talk about data IQ from the technical side of things.
That's what they all say, right?
Yeah.
Quit anytime.
Can you, though? Also joining us is Coach John Mayfield. John is a USAT Level 2 and Ironman U certified coach who leads TriDot's Athlete Services, Ambassador, and Coaching Programs. He has coached hundreds of athletes ranging from first-timers to Kona qualifiers and professional triathletes. John has been using TriDot since 2010 and coaching with TriDot since 2012. And as of this past weekend, John, you are now a 7-time Ironman finisher. Congrats on the Ironman PR that you set in Maryland.
Thank you. That was a good day. It was a fun day and always great to set the PR.
I'm Andrew, the average triathlete, voice of the people and captain of the middle of the pack. As always, we'll treat the show like any good workout. We'll roll through our warm-up question, settle in for our main set topic, and then wind things down with our cool down. Last week on the show, it was a pleasure to have Oxford University professor Kieran Clark, founder and CEO of T Delta S Global, talk with us about the performance and health benefits of drinking the revolutionary Oxford ketone ester called Delta G. Professor Clark led the effort to develop Delta G, which is now available in 3 strengths, 10 grams for health, 25 grams for performance, and 32 grams of raw ester for that extra mile. Delta G is a powerful fuel source that augments physical performance, it sharpens mental acuity, and supports your metabolic health. I recently tried the Delta G 25-gram ketone performance drink for a 20-minute bike power test. With Delta G in my system, I averaged 4 watts higher than I was expecting, with a lower heart rate than I typically have during an FTP test. I'm excited to continue using Delta G in my own race prep, so head to DeltaGKetones.com and try Delta G for yourself. At DeltaGKetones.com, they even offer free 15-minute one-on-one consultations where you can learn more, ask questions, and have your questions answered. So again, that's DeltaGKetones.com and use the code TRIDOT20 to get 20% off your Super Fuel Delta G ketone drinks.
Time to warm up. Let's get moving.
Many organizations like sports leagues, art societies, and business industries have a hall of fame to honor individuals who stand out above their peers as contributors to that organization. Triathlon is no different, with governing bodies like Ironman, USA Triathlon, and many others having their own individual hall of fame. So guys, if you were to be inducted into a hall of fame that is not triathlon related, because that answer would be way too easy, which hall of fame would you pick? And I will go on record saying it can be absolutely anything. It does not have to be something that you are actually skilled at. In this hypothetical, you would have the top tier ability needed to make it into this industry's Hall of Fame. My only request is that you pick a Hall of Fame that is real. So no making anything up, Corey. Corey, you're up first.
All right. Thanks, Andrew. I'd say either a Nobel Prize, if that's considered a Hall of Fame, or the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. I majored in physics in college, so a Nobel Prize would be pretty rad. And I'm a mediocre guitar player, so I could settle for that if the Nobel Prize didn't work out. Thinking sort of like Brian May of Queen, who's an astrophysicist and is in the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame.
Is that like your role model? Is that the life you're trying to emulate? Is the life of Brian May of Queen, from Queen?
Totally. I would go for that any day, for sure.
The question is, was Brian May a CrossFit junkie?
Probably not. Well, I don't know, actually. He may be. He very well may be.
And Corey, you say that you're not one, but I do want our listeners to know this about you. When you visited Texas, a couple times a year, we get the whole Tryout staff together for some meetings near our home base in Texas. Corey is not in Texas, so he flew in. And Corey, you're at my house, and you walked into my pain cave. And in my pain cave, there's a really nice treadmill. There's my bike on the trainer. My wife and I have a whole room that we have set up just for our workouts. And Corey walks in, and of all the cool triathlon tech in my pain cave, the first thing Corey points out is my pull-up bar. And he goes, oh, that's a nice pull-up bar. So you can say you're not a CrossFit junkie, but in a triathlete workout room, the first thing you notice was the pull-up bar. So anyway, Coach John Mayfield, what are you going with here? What Hall of Fame would you hypothetically want to be inducted into?
So I don't know the criteria for getting into this one. It's just cool to mention. In Arizona, in Tombstone, Arizona, there is a Gunfighters Hall of Fame.
No, stop it.
So Tombstone is like top five movies of all time. I can't tell you how many times I've watched it, or to the dismay of my wife, how many times I've quoted the entire thing from start to finish. So I, of all things, maybe the Gunfighter Hall of Fame in Tombstone, Arizona.
John, that is such a cool answer that I don't even want to give my answer, because that's like, you know, we're walking away from this episode. We're giving Corey a Nobel Prize, and we're making you a gunfighter, like an old West
yes.
gunfighter. So this is a pretty productive episode so far, guys. We're gonna throw this question out to you as we always do. I'm curious to see, you know, Corey's winning a Nobel Prize, John's becoming a gunfighter from the old Wild West, which is the coolest answer. Can you top that answer? Is there something that you're so passionate about? You say, you know what? I wish I was so good at this that I could be in the Hall of Fame. We're gonna throw this out to the I Am Tryout Facebook group, and can't wait to see what you have to say. What Hall of Fame would you want to land in?
On to the main set. Going in 3, 2, 1.
We recently had sports scientist Andy Blow from Precision Hydration on the show and learned that there isn't a one-size-fits-all approach to hydration because everyone loses a different amount of salt in their sweat. As someone who sweats a lot, I wanted to get a better understanding of how much salt I lose in my sweat, so I took their online sweat test. After taking the test, I received a personalized hydration plan and was recommended their strongest electrolyte drink, pH 1500, which is 3 times stronger than most sports drinks. It's been a game changer for me, particularly in hot conditions. If you've ever struggled with hydration issues like dehydration or cramping during long, hot sessions, it's worth checking out precisionhydration.com. You can take their free online sweat test, find out which pH strength matches how you sweat, and then get 10% off your order with the code TRYDOT10. To learn more, you can even book a free 20-minute video consultation with them to ask any questions that you have about hydration and fueling, or to discuss your strategy for an upcoming race. So again, that's precisionhydration.com, and use the code TRYDOT10 to get 10% off your electrolytes and fuel. When we say Tryout training is data-driven, it's because it is. Your training is designed with your actual data informing the system on who you are and what you are capable of. And these days, there are a variety of different devices that we can use to capture all that lovely, tasty data. So today, we want to take a look at what we are using to record that data and how Tryout takes the reins from there. So, I do want to say this, whether you have all the tech or none of the tech, you can still be a triathlete, you can still train effectively, you can still use Tryout and do the right training right. So John, when we talk about the quality of our data mattering, what do we mean by that? What does better data inputs do for our training?
So there's an old saying in software and in computing, garbage in, garbage out. And the inverse of that is true. So the higher the quality of the data that is provided, the higher the data or the higher the quality of the output is going to be. So because the data matters, because as you mentioned, TriDot is actually using each individual's training data and driving future training sessions based on that, the quality of the data that is being provided matters. So it actually works in all ways. We talk about I am TriDot and we are TriDot in the thought that my data makes you better and your data makes me better. So the better the quality data that we're all providing, that is just going to help raise the bar that much more. It is going to help produce further insights and further drive the innovation of what TriDot is doing with data-driven training.
Yeah, very true, John. And TriDot at this point with the thousands of with the tens of thousands of athletes that are on TriDot, training with TriDot, there are millions of data files in the system that are helping inform our data. And so, you know, we had our episode one of the podcast was called I Am TriDot. And it was just diving into that fact, how TriDot works, how TriDot uses our data to continually make the training better. So Corey, yeah, you know, when we start talking about the actual individual data that's coming in from one particular athlete, when my data is coming in, you know, what makes the data coming in from some athletes higher quality than the data that comes in from others?
That's a great question. And it's very similar to getting good training outcomes. It's about consistency, right? The more consistent you are, the better your training becomes. The same thing happens with the data that comes in to TriDot. The more consistent that data quality, the better that we can understand your training. And this helps us behind the scenes to know that we're getting consistent data. So if your power numbers increase by a certain percentage, we know that it's not an accident. An example of this would be like if you have a power meter that's got plus or minus 1% accuracy or plus or minus 10% accuracy. On a good day, you might get a 200 watt threshold. But on a bad day, for both of those, the 1% is going to be 198 and the 10% could be down to 180. And wow, so if you're training off of, yeah, right. Yeah. If you're training off of a 20 watt deficit, but still trying to hit that 200 watts because the consistency is not there in your data quality, then you're going to either overstrain or just not hit your numbers. So having that higher quality is just going to help us to understand that your training is consistent as well.
Yeah, well, and that just shows you. I mean, you can be using the same device. If that device that's measuring your data isn't super accurate, you know, you can think over time, week in and week out, that you're, you know, improving and then deproving and then improving and then deproving, and all it is just the variability of your device, right?
Sure, yeah. And that example I had was definitely extreme, but it could come into play for certain.
So Corey, because of this, the dev team at TriDot has devised Data IQ. It's a new score that pops up on every training session after that training session has been completed. And a lot of folks have asked some questions about it. So we wanted to take today's podcast, dedicate it to the TriDotters out there who have seen that Data IQ score on their training and just explain all the ins and outs of it, what it is, why it matters, how it works. So Corey, tell us, what is Data IQ?
Yeah, so I guess to start, Data IQ stands for data input quality. We've already talked about it a little bit. It's a way for us to give athletes insight and feedback into how strong their data is as we see it. It's important because the data that is provided to us is what we use to optimize your training. And some data is better than no data when it comes to things. So having any data is going to benefit you if it's just heart rate, GPS, power. And then you can get more granular where certain data sources are better than others. Data IQ is a way that we quantify that quality of the data that you're providing to us, and it can guide you into providing us with even better data as that becomes possible for you.
All right, so let's dive into it. Let's dive into the 411, the most frequently ask questions that we've seen athletes ask about Data IQ since its release. And Corey, the number one question that I see athletes ask is, what all affects my Data IQ score? So Corey, talk us through it.
Yeah, there's many factors that come into Data IQ, and they all have a range of weights and that apply to those factors that come into building that score. But let's break it down a little bit for each of those main categories. one of the main ones is just the type of equipment you have. If for example, on a bike, if you're just using GPS, that might score a little bit lower than if you have GPS and heart rate or GPS and a power meter. So then within those power meters, there's a difference of accuracy levels, like I mentioned in that earlier example. So you could have plus or minus accuracy of 10 on a power meter or a smart trainer versus a more accurate power device that's just plus or minus 1%. And those manufacturers publish those variances, and we're able to kind of group scores based upon those tiers.
So the more devices we're using to measure our training sessions, and the more accurate those are kind of the first things that come into play.
Yeah, for sure. The more data, the better, and the more accurate data, even better is okay. The way that we like to consider it, for sure. And along those lines, so how did that data come to us, right? So if you're just self-reporting, for example, an assessment, we're just trusting that data that you input, versus if you're manually uploading a file from an assessment, then that's going to be maybe a little higher rating. And then if we can actually extract your assessment from an assessment workout or session, then we know that came straight to us from the device, and we can give that an even higher score.
Which that's a cool new thing, Corey. And a lot of athletes, like, we didn't announce that. We didn't say anything about that. And so I think some people started picking up on it. It used to be that no matter what, after you did an assessment, you had to go in and manually punch in your results. And now you guys have kind of tweaked some stuff, and you've put in the capability for TriDot to detect when someone has done their assessment, and it pulls in that data automatically. And it's pretty cool. It's pretty wild. I did my last assessment was a swim assessment, and I got back from the pool and I pulled up TriDot to go manually enter how I did. And it was already there. My 400 was there. My 200 was there. My new swim.dot score was already there. So kudos to your team for implementing that. So when we talk about how the data came to TriDot, tell me this, does it matter whether the data came to TriDot through Strava or through Zwift or through Garmin Connect, or all those mediums kind of seen the same?
Yes, that's a tough question. The short answer is we prefer the direct connections. So if it comes straight from what recorded the device to us, that's preferred and gets a higher score versus something that goes through an intermediary source. So if it goes from Zwift to Strava to Garmin to us, then we can't maybe predict that that's got the most accurate, because some different platforms might munge the data around or okay. something.
Okay. So if I'm going for a run and I've got my Garmin watch on, I need to, the best way to do it would be to connect my Garmin account so that the data is going from my Garmin watch to my Garmin Connect to TriDot, as opposed to my Garmin watch to Strava to TriDot, because it's just getting pushed straight through Garmin in that example.
We definitely prefer that direct connection, and there's just a very small change in the score if it does go through Strava.
Okay.
But still, the important thing there is that you're getting us the data from a source. That's the biggest boost to your score there.
Okay.
So other factors that go into a data IQ score are things like power, heart rate monitor, GPS. So if you have all of those things, it's going to score higher than just heart rate monitor alone.
Yeah, and that even reflects, I mean, John, on the podcast several times, you've mentioned how important it is to have both power and heart rate, because, you know, one, I mean, your power number is essentially showing how hard you're working, but then the heart rate reflects how the body is perceiving that work. And you talked many times about how those are two different things. It's the input and the output on what the body is doing. And so it's cool to see, John, I'm assuming you think it's cool to see how that's reflected in the data IQ score.
Yeah, because you're right. It is. It's more data. It's more how the body is responding, what the body's doing. So yeah, the larger picture we can see of what's going on, then again, that's going to lead to better insights as we further develop training.
Having more data is important, but also training to what was prescribed. So for session-based data IQ, if your session is a power-based session and you don't provide power in the file, the score is not going to be as high as if you train with power. So if you're away from your power meter and run and do it, do a bike just with heart rate, great. You're probably still getting good effect out of your training, but the data IQ score is going to suffer a little bit because we prescribed power and you didn't provide it.
No, that totally makes sense. And we've, I mean, the Trainex score as well, you know, sometimes can take a small hit just because you're not able to execute that session exactly. You know, if it's a heart rate, and I'm so bad at this. Like, I am so bad at, I'm very inconsistent, and I'll probably say this a couple times in this episode. I'm very inconsistent with putting on my stupid dadgum heart rate monitor. You know, there's sometimes that I'm upstairs in my pain cave and I'm hopping on the bike and I'm like, ah, my heart rate monitor is downstairs. Okay, what's my session today? And if it's a zone 2 session, I'll go downstairs to get it because the heart rate really matters on that. And if it's not a zone 2 session and it's a power based session, I might not go get it. And my data IQ is quite. But anyway, so it's cool to see that if it's a heart rate session, the heart rate monitor really matters even more so. And if it's a power based session, that power meter matters even more so. So yeah, great to hear that, Corey.
Yeah, just a couple more factors. One is, we like to see a history of training, right? So if you've got a bike workout and you upload a file, we want to see that you've consistently trained with that device or whatever you've been using over time. So the more training history you have for your sessions per discipline, we're going to boost your score a little bit.
And I think, Corey, I think I saw, and you can correct me if I'm wrong, when Data IQ first came out, I know you were on the I'm Trying to Facebook group and you were really trying to answer people's questions as much and often as you could, you know, with the work you were doing. And I think I even saw you kind of comment a couple of people that the Data IQ score, because of that, will inherently start lower and build over time because you're building that history of doing your bike workouts consistently, doing your run workouts consistently, doing your swim workouts consistently, and the consistency there helps raise your score over time. Is that correct?
For sure. And we look back within a certain window too, right? So you could have a million bike workouts, but if they were 2 years ago, they're not as relevant. So it's got to be some recency there too, which we can talk about as well with assessments. So there's this recency of assessments. That's another huge factor that we saw on the TriDot group when this first was released. So over time, data can get stale. So if you've done if your last FTP or 5K was maybe February 28th or so, and we're talking in September about this, then your score is going to be a lot lower than it would be if you had a more recent 5K.
Corey, why are you getting that specific? Why are you throwing out the date February 28th?
You know, I've seen some data on certain athletes that maybe captains of middles of packs, and that could be the situation that they're currently in.
Yeah. So to round out what Corey's saying here, so slyly and cleverly, we were talking before we hit record on this episode. We were talking about Data IQ and. I was sharing with Corey what some of my recent dead IQ scores have been, and my run scores have been very low ever since dead IQ came out. And that's because, like Corey's alluding to, my last run assessment was on February 28th of this year. And a couple reasons why, you know, I was training for Ironman Texas, which was supposed to happen in April. You know, I did my last run assessment in February. I was hitting those longer sessions leading up to Ironman. You know, the race on the calendar kind of threw off when I was doing my assessments. That race got postponed, got canceled, you know, and so for a couple months there over the summer, I was a little inconsistent with my training. John and I were doing some traveling to Ironman races ourselves, cheering on athletes. And so I had a few months where I just didn't get that 5K session in. And then I had kind of a foot problem as I started gearing up for Ironman Waco. I had some pain in the bottom of my foot that I was trying to manage while I was doing my training. And so I wasn't throwing that 5K assessment effort down on my foot. And so I put it off again for another couple months. And so for all these reasons, and I know everyone listening, if you're a TriDot athlete, you've had a time in your TriDot journey where you've done this, right? Where you just keep putting off your assessment for one reason or another. And all of a sudden you look back and it's like, oh man, I haven't done a run assessment. We're in September now. So I haven't done a run assessment in 7 months. And I actually have one on the calendar for this upcoming Sunday, and I'm going to do it. And that's fantastic. I'm excited about it. And that IQ score is going to go up because of it. And so, yes, to your point, Corey, my run data, my run assessment is stale. That is an old score. I'm sure my time will be very different from where it was in February. So, yes, thank you so much, Corey Gackenheimer, for calling out my Nobel Prize to you for calling out my lack of recency on my assessment.
As a coach, I am loving this accountability. We now have several thousand people who know that Andrew, by the time the podcast airs, Andrew will have a new updated run assessment. So
go find it on Strava, see how my 5K went.
It has to happen.
So TriDot athletes are already used to seeing the TrainX score, which tells me how I executed my particular training session. So now that I see the data IQ score as well, it's made me wonder this, Corey, how... Does my data IQ score that I see on my session, does that score impact my future training sessions?
Yeah, it doesn't directly impact that training at all. That is still based upon your other data that comes to us through training and assessments and optimized that way. However, if you haven't done an assessment in 6 months or you haven't been riding with power for a while or you haven't been wearing your heart rate monitor, then we can't prescribe that training to the degree that we would love. And so what we're trying to do is give you more insight into what we look at in the data that you send us and how that can factor into having higher data or in how you can increase that data.
That's quality. Interesting because like when I think of training stress, it's basically if you haven't connected those devices and trained those devices for TriDot to see how your body's responding to the training, it's like we're not proving to TriDot that our body can handle the training stress that it wants to give us in the future. It's kind of what you're saying, right?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. The better the data that we get, just the easier it is for us to know that you're doing the right training right.
So the TrainX score quantifies how well the athlete followed the training and achieved the desired result of that session. So again, the TrainX score is feedback on the actual execution of the session, what the athlete did. Data IQ works in a similar way, but it's not actually scoring what the athlete did. It's scoring the data that is provided from that session. So neither of these metrics, neither TrainX nor Data IQ, directly influence that future training. So this is one reason we don't obsess over the score. It's just information that we use. But in both of these scenarios, the data that drives these scores, that is. So both the data from the session and then the quality of that data, that indirectly is going to influence that future training. And both of these metrics are largely opportunity for improvement. So how can I improve the execution of my training? How can I do the right training right better? How can I hit these intervals or whatever the case may be? And then also with Data IQ is how can I improve the quality of the data that I'm providing? Is it providing more data? Doing things like adding the heart rate monitor to a power-based session? Or is it doing that assessment so that your intensities are current and all that? So again, both of these are just opportunities to improve both the training that you're doing. And by doing that, you will inevitably improve the training that is prescribed.
So I knew that Data IQ was a thing about to be released. I'd heard you guys talk about it on some work calls. I knew a little bit about it. But when I saw my Data IQ score pop up on those first couple workouts after it had been released, my first question was, what is a good score and what is a bad score? Because I can tell you the scores I was getting at first, I was like, these are pretty bad scores. So is there even such a thing as a good score and a bad score? Corey, kind of what is the grading scale here? And how should we react to the numbers that we're seeing?
Your Data IQ score is a score from 0 to 100, but I wouldn't equate it to a grading scale where 90 to 100 is an A and that's what you're striving for. The higher is obviously better. Just when you have a scale from 0 to 100, that's implied. But it's also something not to lose sleep over. So if your Data IQ score is a 12 or a 22, I wouldn't fret over it. It's more informational, like you said. You want to continue to provide us with better data, but you have to do that within the means that you have with the devices that you have. So for example, when I first started training with TriDot, I was on a dumb trader with just a speed and cadence sensor. I still saw great gains, still made my way through the training and progressed quickly with TriDot. And my data IQ would have been really, really bad, probably between, you know, zero and 30 even, maybe. I don't know. I could rerun those numbers and find out. But on the budget I was on, I knew I could start accruing new things. Like, so get a heart rate monitor, then get a power meter, then maybe get a smart trainer for the indoor season, things like that. But yeah, the scales from zero to 100, and so the lower maybe aren't the most ideal. And then there's the middle scores and the upper scores, but it's not something to lose sleep over.
Yeah. I heard, TriDot marketing director, Matt Bach, you know, podcast regular, great guy. I heard him kind of talk about data IQ in this way. He was saying that it's a feedback loop, right? Where we as athletes, we're giving, you know, we're feeding data into TriDot, and then TriDot is feeding training sessions back down to us. And so what the data IQ score is, it's not necessarily a good score, bad score. Oh, you're doing a bad job, you have a low score. It's just, if you have a low score on your data IQ, what that's telling you is that you're not doing a fantastic top of the line job in your side of the relationship with TriDot and feeding data up into that feedback loop, was kind of his way of putting it. So it's not, oh, that session went poorly, or oh, my training's not going well because I have a low score. And right now I can tell you my swim data IQ scores are pretty good. They're in the 50s, 60s, 70s, typically, just swimming with my Garmin watch and feeding that at the TriDot. My bike scores, kind of like I alluded to earlier, it just depends on if I go downstairs and grab my heart rate monitor or not. Sometimes they're a little higher, sometimes they're a little lower. But it's just, did I take the time to actually fire up all my devices, which I need to, obviously. And my run scores have been very low because of that lack of recency in my assessment. I'm using my heart rate monitor, I'm using my Stride power meter. The score is still low because my assessment is so stale. And so on that, those run data IQ scores, I mean, my run training is going great. Just I am not really fulfilling my end of the bargain in my relation, in my data relationship with TriDot when it comes to my running. And that's all that score means, is that I can improve the data and the amount of data and the recency of the data that I'm giving the TriDot in that feedback loop. And that's when I heard Matt put it that way, it really, I think, gave me a better, healthier picture of my relationship, my data relationship with TriDot and what that score is saying. So all that being said, Corey, if we have a low score or if we have a middling score, you know, as triathletes, we like having high scores. We're performers, we're achievers. What can we do to raise those scores?
Yeah, and as I alluded to, I started with very basic items for my bike in particular. So even simple things like when I added a heart rate monitor, or then I got Zwift, which then allowed me to use some calculated power from their algorithms with my speed and cadence sensor before I got my power meter. So those things are going to start sending better data to TriDot, and that's going to boost my score for my data IQ. And I was still able to train to great success. I PR'd my 70.3 on my way to Ironman Florida, and then power meter pedals and things like a smart trainer for the last winter I got. But the data IQ was slowly raised over time that way. But I was on a budget. So even if I was just had a heart rate monitor and a GPS watch for my runs, like you said, and I did my assessments more recently, it would be good.
So the easiest thing to do to raise lower data IQ scores is to ensure that the assessments are current. And I, as a coach, I really appreciate this one because most athletes have a certain amount of disdain for the assessments. And honestly, I don't love them. They're hard. They hurt. They are an easy session to skip. But we did a whole podcast on how important assessments are. There are numerous benefits from doing those. And really, when it comes time to drive the data IQ score, it's important to recognize that those assessments are representative of a day. So you went out and you did an assessment on a day. So that was representative of your fitness, of your pace, your power, your heart rate on that particular day. The further we move away from that day, the less relevant, the less accurate that data is. So chances are that number isn't the same 1 month, 2 months, 3 months later. You've either made gains in fitness or you've lost fitness. There's not a real high certainty that or high probability that you're going to be the exact same place that you were. So you're either going to be more fit, you're going to be less fit. Your threshold power is going to be higher or lower. But if you're training 3 months later based on the results from that assessment that were done 3 months ago, that's not going to truly be doing the right training right, because the right training right demands that we're doing training based on your current fitness level, that the intensities within your session are representative of your current fitness level. Remember, the sessions are very specific in what they are prescribing and what the desired outcome of that session is, and that's achieved through doing certain amounts of time at very specific intensities. So that is why it is so important to truly know what your thresholds are, because your thresholds are then driving those intensity zones, your swim paces, your bike heart rate zones, your bike power numbers, your run paces, your run heart rate zones. All that is based on that assessment data and is a critical component, even tying back into your TrainX score. So that's what's driving your TrainX. So these are important metrics. So I'm actually really happy about this. And I'm one that I've been known to let my assessments go stale, but I think one, this is some great accountability to keep those assessments current. But, it's just really great to reinforce the importance of the assessments and how important it is to have current accurate information that is driving the sessions that we're doing.
Like we've said, much of the score is at the mercy of how current your assessments are. But then it also sounds like a large portion of our score is at the mercy of the devices that we're using to capture our data. So John, for the swim, bike, and run, what are the options out there for recording data that you see athletes most frequently using?
So the swim is pretty straightforward. You need a device that is going to measure the time and the distance of your session. So vast majority of athletes have that. So they are largely the same as far as quality goes. So if you have a device that is measuring your pool session time, distance, you're going to be good as far as that goes. So really there, assuming you have that, just having the current swim assessments and you'll have great data IQ scores for the swim. Bike is probably where we get the most opportunities and most diversity. So the base level is going to be just GPS. So this is going to provide the time, the distance of the session. We can improve that by adding a heart rate monitor. So now if we have the GPS, which will track the time and distance, and then add heart rate monitors to that, that's that one up. And that's a super easy thing to do. It's pretty inexpensive. And this is really where most people enter structured training. They come into the sport. That's kind of where most of us start or at least get there very early on. And then from there for the bike, it's adding a power device, maybe even two for different scenarios. So this would be either a power meter or a smart trainer, but somehow being able to quantify the intensity that you're doing using power. So again, it's either a power meter and or a smart trainer. And then those will vary in accuracy. So Corey alluded to this early. Not all devices are created equally. There are those that have a higher accuracy percentage, and then some others have lower. So that is factored in as well. And then the run is pretty basic. Also, it's kind of like the entry point of the bike is we're looking for GPS to track the distance and time, and then to enhance that would be adding that heart rate monitor to that. So having GPS with heart rate. So the great thing is the vast majority of those, if you have a good device, like your most of our athletes use a Garmin watch, that's going to take care of it. And that goes a very long way. Your multi-sport Garmin watch with heart rate is really going to take care of everything you need for the swim and the run, and most of what you need for the bike. So the good news is this is not necessarily, we're not requiring or even encouraging athletes to go out and spend a tremendous amount of money and buy all these gadgets. It's, you know, for a couple hundred bucks, you can go get the get a nice watch. You probably have it anyway, and you're very far down the road and being to where you need to be.
So Corey, in creating the numerical scale here that kind of takes into an account, you know, okay, you can only get a certain data IQ score if you're GPS only. Once you had a heart rate monitor, you know, we're going to raise the score to this or that, you know, and doing all the math behind that, you know, data IQ has obviously made some judgments and some decisions on how high or low the quality is coming in from different devices. So kind of what was done behind the scenes? What decisions were made behind the scenes in order to determine how quality the data is coming in from particular devices?
Yeah, that's a great question. And the easiest way to answer is things like GPS and heart rate. The scale is based off of, we just really want to get that data. So if we see that you have GPS data, we see that you have heart rate data, you're going to get the top score for that factor.
Okay.
As John said, power meters and smart trainers can have varying accuracies, and those accuracies are provided by those manufacturers. So we have a matrix of those meters and smart trainers and what their published accuracies are, and we're able to group those devices, that power that comes into us, whatever that device was, into different buckets and rate the scores a little bit higher for those that have more accurate power readings than those that are lower.
So we're definitely going to have some athletes that, you know, they listen to this and they've heard, okay, there's different ways to capture data. There's different accuracy ratings to capture data. I want to be able to get the highest score I can possibly get. So John, for those athletes, you know, just in terms of capturing quality data, you know, and trying to get the best data IQ score that we can, you know, what is kind of the ideal device combination across the swim, bike, and run? You know, which devices are the absolute best for us to use?
So again, just to say it again, having those current assessments is a critical component of that. But then for the top tier results, again, pretty simple. It's having a swim device, probably that GPS watch to track the time and distance in the pool. Again, that's gonna put you there. The ideal combination for the bike would be both GPS with heart rate and then what I call a premium power device. So this is going to be a power meter that has a 1-2% accuracy rating. So this is going to be, they are the more expensive ones. That's one of the things you get with a more expensive power meter or a more expensive smart trainer, is they are going to be more accurate. That percentile is going to be smaller within these. So some of those, the cheaper ones, they're going to have a larger delta. So that's one of the things that you're getting when you buy that more expensive power meter, that more expensive smart trainer. So just for example, the Tax Neo trainer is going to have a higher accuracy than the Flux. There's a pretty good price difference there, and that's one of the things that is different between those. So again, for the bike, GPS with heart rate and one of those premium power meters with a 1-2% accuracy. And then on the run, GPS with heart rate.
Yeah, and I just want to interject real quick on the run. There are people that run like Andrew with the stride power or yeah, other forms of power.
Yep.
That's currently not factored into data IQ. We do record it and keep track of what you've been using. I run with power, not stride, but as power for run becomes more ubiquitous, it may at some point factor into the data IQ, but it currently does not.
So for athletes out there who maybe don't have all of those devices and you know, they want to see their scores raised, and so maybe, you know, with Christmas coming up, they put you know, a power meter on their Christmas list, or maybe with you know, a birthday or something, or planning their purchases for the 2022 tri season. They're going to start budgeting for some of these data recording items they don't have yet. You know, what once folks get all the devices and get the tech, you know, how quickly should they expect to see their scores rise from those purchases?
Your next assessment will be the biggest jump in those scores. You'll see it on your session to session recordings as well. Your data IQ will go up a little bit if you've added a heart rate monitor, for instance, or you've added power. Those things are going to boost, but the biggest jump is when you do your next fresh assessment that raises the ceiling of those data IQ scores the most.
So it's not a bad idea if you do add something like that, especially if you haven't had that before. That's even important to do. So if you're adding power for the first time, the first step in doing that is doing a power test. So now that you can establish your thresholds, and now we can establish those power zones. So it's kind of taking care of that all at once. Is you'll be able to establish those zones and then kind of reset the data IQ around that with that new tech.
So I think we more or less at this stage in today's episode, you know, we've more or less gone through why data quality is important, you know, what data IQ is, and how we can improve it as athletes. So tell me this, because again, we have some type A tri-dotters out there that will be wondering this one. What do I do here? You know, what are the actionable items for me as an athlete beyond just looking at my score, you know, each day after a session and moving on?
Yeah, and I think we've talked about this a lot already, is don't skip assessments. That those are critical for the data IQ score, as well as making sure that your training is as accurate as possible. And also be aware of the score, but don't get freaked out by it. If it's low, the training's still definitely working. And if you keep accumulating gear over time, then your score is going to go up as well. So that's important to keep in mind.
Yeah. And I want to encourage folks, you know, don't feel like you have to go make a bunch of purchases today. We've intentionally said several times in the episode today, regardless of what devices you're training with, regardless of what your data IQ score is, the training is working. You are improving. You know, you belong as a tri-dot athlete and as a triathlete in this space. It just, again, if you have some more of those devices, it just raises your end of the data feedback cycle. You're just applying tri-dot with more data. You know, but hey, as we head into the Christmas holiday season, as we head into you know, the off season where perhaps some athletes are thinking about their next purchase, keep the tri-dot store in mind. All of our tri-dot ambassadors, all of our tri-dot users, you do get a discount on the tri-dot store. So just keep that in mind, because there's a lot of fun Garmin items there. There's a lot of fun, you know, tax trainers and different things that you can buy on the store that can help raise that data IQ quotient once your budget allows. So, guys, lots of great stuff today from both of you. I really appreciate you walking our listeners through data IQ. So let's kind of land the plane today with this one. You know, we've said it numerous times, the training is the same. The Trainix scores are there. The sessions are there. Race day will be there just like it always has. Numerically knowing the quality of our data is the only thing that here that is new. So Corey, John, you know, close us down with this. How much should athletes focus on their data IQ score day to day?
Yeah, for me personally, I see it at the end of every session when I go check my scores. I, of course, know how it works, but I also think that any other athlete will see over time how it works and how it can change between assessments. I think it's important to note, but like I said, don't lose sleep over it, and just know how that helps to inform us of your data.
So it's right there kind of with the Trainix score, as we mentioned before. Trainix is your execution. Data IQ is the data that's being provided. That Trainix score is very dynamic. It is going to change with every session depending on how well you executed it. And you have a whole lot of control over how well you execute your training sessions. So that's great feedback to check every single day. I look at that after every session. I go in with the objective of scoring highly on those Trainix scores with every session I do, because I want to be intentional in my training. Data IQ is less dynamic. It's not going to fluctuate day to day like your Trainix can. So it's more of a a gradual improvement over time. Again, we want to make sure that those assessments are current and we're providing as much high quality data as possible. But again, once that's done, once you've done your assessment and once you've connected all your devices and you're providing all of that data that you can, then you've largely maximized your data IQ and you know, not a whole lot else to worry about or even do. So less than the Trainex, but it's just a good thing to keep an eye on. And then when it does start to fall off, again, it's a good opportunity, a good reminder that either you may have missed an assessment or you got one coming up.
Great set, everyone. Let's cool down.
Most triathletes in the triathlon community have experienced some form of a race postponement or cancellation at some point in the last year or so. And it doesn't matter the distance from sprint to Ironman, having your A race axed is disappointing no matter what. Once an A race is off the schedule, there are a few ways an athlete can respond, and one of them is to take the fitness you have and put on a do-it-yourself version of the race. Joining me for our cool down today are a husband and wife duo that were part of a recent DIY Ironman. Polly and her training partner Vish took on the race, while Taryn handled the logistics and rallied the crowd. This one had it all. The full 140.6-mile course, on-course bike support, multiple aid stations, cheering friends and family, and the finish line. So, Polly, Taryn, thanks for coming on the show to tell us about your Ironman.
Thank you.
Yeah, thanks for having us on. We're super excited because we've been listening to the show for a long time. It's like long-time listeners, first-time callers.
That's what I like to hear. That warms my heart more than you know. And I'm especially thrilled to get athletes like yourself on the show. So thanks for taking the time today. So Polly, you know, you've been working towards completing an Ironman since you first signed up for Ironman Texas, October of 2018. Set the stage for us a little bit here. What all have you been through trying to accomplish that goal since then? And how ready were you for Ironman Texas 2021?
Yes. Okay. So my story, you're right. It is super long because it starts way back in October 2018 when I decided I was going to sign up for my first Ironman, which was IMTX 2019. And so I trained, I got ready as best as I could and went to the race. And on race day, I ended up missing the bike cutoff by 4 minutes. It was a super windy day. Couldn't quite make it. Was obviously really bummed. But just decided that, you know what, that's okay. I'm going to come back stronger next year. And then I actually, it was great, actually, because one of my friends who does TriDot actually reached out to me at that point. He was like, hey, you know what, Polly, there's this awesome program. And so I was like, okay, let me try this out. So I started TriDot pretty much immediately after that IMTX. Really saw some good fitness gains. Also ended up getting a new tri bike, which was super sweet and a lot faster. Would have made up for that 4 minutes of the previous year. So I felt super ready. I was fitter. I was stronger. I was better trained, all ready to do IMTX 2020. And then we all know what happened. and I was super bummed. Honestly, thinking back at the time, I don't think I realized how long this whole thing was going to be.
Yeah.
If I had known then, I probably would have done a DIY race at that time, you know, in hindsight. But anyway, so it was canceled and I said, okay, that's no big deal. Gives me more time to train. I'm just going to get back to the, you know, get back to work, get stronger. And I was all ready for this year. And then when it happened again, I was like, you know what? I can't wait anymore. I am so ready for this race. I was just primed and ready to go. And I said, I don't want to waste all my training. So that's when we decided, you know what? Let's just do it. Let's just do it ourselves and figure it out. And we were just so lucky to have this awesome crew that we have, you know, neighbors and friends and other runners and bikers that we know who were super excited to help us out. So we said, why waste the opportunity?
Yeah. And so you've officially with Ironman, you've deferred to do Ironman Texas in 2022, but not in the spirit of not wanting to wait until then, you guys decided to put it on this year. So Taryn, you handle the logistics of this DIY Ironman. You weren't scheduled to race it, but you helped put it together. You mapped out the course. You organized volunteers. Talk us through the challenges of designing a full Ironman course and the support the community gave to Polly and Vish.
Yeah, it's an interesting journey, right? The swim-wise actually probably was the easiest for us. Houston has this one private lake that everybody swims. It's called Twin Lakes, south of Fairland. And you just do four loops of that. That's your full Ironman course. So that was straightforward. The bike course took us a while to plan out because, so both of us are long-term cyclists. And for me, I don't like loops. I just say, hey, go out all the way, come back, and you're done, right? So my first course that I designed was like that. And then we wrote it, and we realized about 50 miles in, she had a flat tire, right? And it was, it's a tubeless tire, but it was still flat, and it took a while. Basically, we had to eventually get somebody to come and pick us up and solve it, because we couldn't solve it at that time. And we realized that that's not a good idea to do. If you need support at that point, you kind of closer loops are easier to have to set up rest stations. And that was the other question. As a long-term cyclist, you end up thinking, I'll just stop at gas stations and I'll be fine. But when you're racing the clock, you want to actually be in a place where you have support faster. So we closed the loop. We need a new loop now where you still start from the lake, come towards the house, and once you get in, so it was 25 miles in, and then the rest of the 80 miles was just here, loops of 30 miles each, so three loops of that kind of got us done. The second most important thing there was that you have to use the race rehearsals to actually ride the course.
For sure. That's a big one. I learned that one yesterday.
One was we learned about what to do with flat tires and how do you avoid those journeys. So the one thing I realized was that if she actually has a flat on race day, I was going to follow her on the bike in a car, actually, for the first 30 miles that she got into the neighborhood.
Okay.
And so I brought a second bike with me. Just her road bike was with me in case she needs to. She can swap bikes and she'll be out. Volunteers worked out well for us. We have a very strong group of runners and cyclists who come with us. So we train with them usually 3 days a week. Somebody would join us locally. So they use this time to set up the rest stops. So we had a Zoom meeting. We kind of planned out how many rest stops we want. Most of the rest stops were really planned for the run course, because on the bike, they're not going to stop that frequently. She stopped once every 35 miles, right? So
yeah,
she'd go out. When she stopped, there was people waiting there with her hydration, her fluid. The other advantage was because there are such few athletes racing, two of them, her and Vish. So we could actually just dial it down to exactly their nutrition and their hydration that they could do.
it's like a private nutrition stop every single time.
Exactly that. They could just pop the bottle out and you're gone. It's your stuff.
It was amazing.
That's amazing.
Yeah. And then for the run course, you kind of need more. So for those to manage volunteers can be daunting there. One trick that worked for us was that we had every 2 miles, we had a rest stop, and we had basically about 6.5 miles out and back. So that's half a marathon, and then do that twice as the course for the run. So that 6.5 miles, think about it as a rest stop every 2 miles. So there's three rest stops really beyond the start point. And we just assigned one rest stop leader, and that person was then responsible for grabbing the rest of the volunteers who were going to be there and set up a roster as to when they come in and go out, because they're not going to stay the whole, you know, it's hard to expect anybody to stay for 17 hours on the course or even from 5 p.m. to 7 to midnight. So they just set up shifts up to 2 hours each that they would go through. The other thing that helped a lot was live tracking on Garmin, because with live tracking, you can kind of know exactly where they are on the bike course. So everybody knew when they're going to be coming. So then you just show up there and then they could go recover.
So Polly, you were out there for all 140.6 miles. How did it go? How was the race?
You know what? It was an awesome day. It was truly awesome.
Good.
You know, one of the things is, like I said, I'm going to be doing Ironman in April 2022. And obviously, I don't know, but I have a feeling in my heart that this is always going to be my favorite Ironman race, you know?
Oh, cool.
And the reason is because it was so personalized. It was just incredible. So, you know, Theron and I showed up and we met Vish and his wife at the lake. We started our swim there, and it was kind of funny because we ran into another couple who was doing the exact same thing. They were also doing their own Ironman race and starting at the lake, and obviously had a different bike and run course. That was pretty cool. So, you know, we did that. That was pretty low key and pretty straightforward. And then it was awesome because when I headed out on the bike, you know, it was just great to have the support right there. Like Theron was there immediately when I started, because he came with me from the lake to the beginning of the bike course. I had a little malfunction on the bike where my DI2s were actually not working. They weren't shifting gears. So that was
Yeah,
that was a little problem.
Just when she started. So we just swapped out, gave her a road bike. I took her tri bike, went home, and the battery was dead. Somehow, brand new battery was dead. So I went back, swapped the battery out, brought it back to her. She was mile 15. Again, I could live track her, brought back the bike and said, yes, your bike can go back.
So this was like
that is top level like Sherpa service.
Yes, exactly. It was actually kind of funny. And then the bike was super windy, but that was great because that means I had a little bit of headwind one way, but such sweet tailwind every time I turned around.
Yeah.
And I ended up doing like 3 loops around the house. One of the best parts was that we have such a great riding community. So we had a bunch of our riding friends who wanted to do little parts of the course with me. Tharwin did a big part of the course with me too. So really, I mean, it felt like a party, you know, where it's not just a bunch of random people on the course, but it's people that I actually know, that I trained with, and who really want to see me finish this thing, you know? So I think it made the 112 miles go so fast. You know, having done all the long training rides where you slog through it, this Ironman ride was by far the best ride I've had. You know, it was just full of camaraderie, just full of friends. It was awesome. And then the run was kind of the same thing. I loved it because every like 2 to 3 miles, I would have a rest stop. So I knew it was coming up. And I felt so good. I was just all jazzed up and, you know, full of adrenaline. So I pretty much just ran in between every rest stop. I didn't really have to walk at all. And everybody was super excited. People ran segments of the run with me too. And so then really that whole 26 miles, it felt like a 10K, I would say. You know, it went by so fast.
Nice.
Good. And then by the time I finished, it was awesome because everybody had gathered at the finish line. This was like about 20 or 30 of our whole crew, our running and riding crew. And, they had, you know, big floodlights and they had like music going and, you know, it was like this big party. Everyone was super excited, lots of food at the finish line, of course. Really it was just an awesome day. And I would say maybe even better than having Mike Riley tell me I'm Ironman. You know, is the love of my life told me that I'm Ironman, right? So, I mean, it was just an awesome ending to a perfect day. I couldn't have asked for more.
I'm sure even Mike wouldn't hold that answer against you. I'm sure he would even agree that that's a more personalized version of the "you are an Ironman" finish line call. So,
right.
So, I mean, super cool. I mean, I saw the pictures you guys posted on Facebook. I mean, the event looked just absolutely amazing. For any other athlete, you know, listening, because Polly, you were the one racing, but both of you were equally invested in this endeavor. You know, what advice would you have for other athletes that maybe their event later this year might get canceled, or maybe they had one last year get canceled, and in the back of their head, they're like, oh, that's a good idea. I'm going to keep that in mind for next time I have a cancellation. What advice would you have for an athlete who wants to put on their own DIY A race?
You know, the number one thing I would say is that if you've trained for it and you feel ready, I would say go for it. Especially, you know, if you're lucky enough to have some support from, you know, family and friends and everything else, it can really become such an amazing day. That definitely takes a lot of work on the front end, which luckily Tharwin did a lot of that work for me. But it was great. Another thing I would say is that that race rehearsal is so important. I think we learned so much from my failed race rehearsal. There's actually a Tri-Dot episode about a podcast about race rehearsals, which I totally related to because I learned so much more from that failure than I did from my success race rehearsal.
Yep.
The other thing, you know, I gotta say, you gotta trust the process. I was watching Polly, right? And I've seen her through every race rehearsal. She had it down to a science where she only ate and drank exactly by the calories that she counted, and then she just executed to plan. I think it's spot on, was tied up with what her race X was as well. So it's pretty good.
Well, that's it for today, folks. I want to thank Corey Gackenheimer and John Mayfield for talking Data IQ with us today. Huge thanks to Delta G for partnering with us on today's episode. To learn more about the performance-boosting benefits of Delta G ketones, head to deltagketones.com and use code TRIDOT20 for 20% off your order. Be sure to also check out the hydration and fuel options from our friends at Precision Hydration. Head to precisionhydration.com and book a call with one of their sweat experts to form your own race day hydration strategy. If you want to give Precision Hydration products a try, you can use promo code TRIDOT10 for 10% off your order. Enjoying the podcast? Have any triathlon questions or topics that you want to hear us talk about? Head to tridot.com/podcast and click on Leave Us a Voicemail to get your voice asking your question on the show. We'll have a new show coming your way soon. Until then, happy training.
Thanks for joining us. Make sure to subscribe and share the TriDot podcast with your triathlon crew. For more great tri content and community, connect with us on Facebook, YouTube, and Instagram. Ready to optimize your training? Head to tridot.com. TryDot.com and start your free trial today. TryDot, the obvious and automatic choice for triathlon training.